folks, my name's Ian Loring. Welcome to Cinerama. I hope you're doing well. Right, coming up on this week's show, Blockbuster season continues apace with one that I've been particularly looking forward to, Transformers Revenge of the Fallen, full review coming up. And also, I'm going to be taking a look at the Blu-ray of Ghostbusters, which was released in the UK and US this past week. Also, movie news, trailer talk, what I watched, and listener feedback. The marathon, I'm going to let the kind of voting, I suppose, continue for another week, while I actually think of what films I'm going to watch in either a John Ford or a John Carpenter marathon. So, going to leave that open for another week. If you are listening to this at the Jellycast feed, please unsubscribe and subscribe to the new feed, which is now available through iTunes with the new logo that Jim Moon came up with, which I'm very, very pleased with. And if you're not, and if you're new as well, welcome. I hope you enjoy the show. And if you've gone over from the Jellycast feed, thank you very much, guys. I would really, really appreciate it if you guys could write reviews on iTunes. Just take a couple of minutes out and write reviews on iTunes for the new feed, just to kind of get it pumping, really. It would be good. Yeah, so that would be great. Feedback is more than welcome. Please email cineramapodcast@yahoo.co.uk. You can follow me on Twitter at twitter.com/IanLoring. The Rattle is currently undergoing an overhaul, and when it comes back, it will be a film-only site. And I'm also taking a more hands-on role with The Rattle. Jordan, the editor-in-chief, has asked me if I wanted to take up a managing editor position at the site, and I have accepted. So, yeah, there'll probably be a lot more input from me on the site when it does come out. Well, no, there will be. Yeah, reviews on iTunes also muchly appreciated. Haven't got the podcast alley feed sorted thing sorted for the new feed yet. What you heard at the start of the show was the first track from Alexis on Fire's new album, Old Crows, Young Cardinals. That track was Old Crows. There'll be another one at the end of the show. So then, to start us off, Michael Bay comes back a mere 2 years after the first Transformers to give us more giant fucking robots fighting and Shia LaBeouf being Shia LaBeouf in Transformers Revenge of the Fallen.
B, I want to talk to you about the college thing, okay?
I'm so excited!
Hey, I'm not taking you with me.
Look at this place! I feel smarter already! Can you smell it?
Yeah, it smells like $40,000 a year.
Hey, beautiful. Made you a long-distance relationship kid. I got your webcam so we can chat 24/7.
Sounds cute. I can't wait.
I just had a full-blown mental meltdown in the middle of my class. I'm seeing symbols.
We've kept much from you, Sam.
This isn't my war.
I fear it soon will be.
What you're about to see is top secret. Do not tell my mother.
Any of these look like the symbols you saw?
Where did you get these?
Archaeologists found these unexplained markings in ancient ruins all over the world.
They gotta mean something, like a message or like a map.
Okay, lead review of the week, quite obviously, is Transformers Revenge of the Fallen, directed by Michael Bay. This stars Shia LaBeouf, Megan Fox, John Turturro, Josh Duhamel, Tyrese Gibson, and loads of other people. Transformers Revenge of the Fallen is the sequel to 2007's Transformers, and sees Sam Witwicky, played by Shia LaBeouf, going off to college and leaving his trusty Autobot Bumblebee behind. But pretty much as soon as he gets there, he encounters trouble, as a previous encounter with the a part of the Allspark cube has left him with a load of stuff going on in his head, and a newly resurrected Megatron wants what's in his head to try and complete the nefarious plans of the Fallen. With the help of the Autobots, Sam and girlfriend Michaela, played by Megan Fox, have to try and save the planet once again. Okay, Transformers Revenge of the Fallen, coming a pretty mere 2 years after the first
first film. I believe Michael Bay pretty much plowed straight into this film after it was given the green light after the release of the first film. And barely made it to cinemas on time, apparently. A lot of the effects work apparently was pretty much unfinished until the very last minute, and so the film has come out. Bizarrely, the UK is the first country in the world to get it. I don't quite know why, to be honest, but that's kind of cool, I suppose. And I like the first Transformers an awful lot. Since seeing it at the cinema, I have watched it on DVD and then Blu-ray a number of times, and while it's starting to get a little bit old on repeated viewing now, the first film really made me giddy like a school kid, and it had something about it, like it mixed kind of top-notch of the day visual effects, and still now, to be honest, visual effects, with a kind of a charm, I suppose, that reminded me of 80s Spielberg-directed and produced kind of films, and I enjoyed that a lot. You could really feel the presence of Spielberg on the first one. So the second one, we have been promised more Bayhem, more robots, more explosions, more locations, bigger budget, longer film. It's 5 minutes longer than the first one at 149 minutes long. And how is it? Well, I hated this film. I'll just lay it right out there for you. Though, I will say the first reel and a half, the first 30, 35 minutes or so, I quite enjoyed. The introduction to the film I thought was quite interesting, showing that, Decepticons had been to Earth before. That was well done. An introductory battle in Shanghai, where it's revealed that the Autobots are working in secret with the US military, I thought was actually pretty well done. And I was actually kind of surprised as well, because the you see in the trailer the shot where, you got Optimus Prime and he's kind of in the foreground against this, like, massive, massive Decepticon. That's this first action sequence, and it was a little bit, oh, okay, fair enough. And then it goes on from there, and the film kind of retains the kind of charm from the first film for the opening before LaBeouf's character goes off to college, he touches this bit of the AllSpark. It makes a load of things in his house come to life, and then Bumblebee stops them rather explosively. And like the kind of the humour and the broad comedy of that, which I did quite enjoy from the first film, is still very much intact here. But then, from then on, it just goes downhill pretty rapidly, I thought. And it's Michael Bay indulging a lot of his whims that make his films a Michael Bay film. Whereas the first one had the feel of a Steven Spielberg film directed by Michael Bay, this has the feel of a Michael Bay film directed by Michael Bay. And while that's not always a bad thing at all, I'm not a complete Michael Bay hater. He's really just kind of indulged himself here, and I think drunk off the success of the first film, he's really gone all out with this one. You've got a lot of robot characters, an awful, awful lot of them. Yet the only ones that really make any impression at all are the two jive-talking, borderline racist twin cars. And there's an interesting bit where they're quite obviously supposed to be black, and they say they can't read. And they're the only Autobots who seem to not be able to read, which is a bit weird. Then Jetfire, this kind of Scottish ex-Decepticon turned Autobot, voiced by John Turturro, bizarrely enough. He makes an impression. I actually laughed a couple of times at some of the stuff he came out with. And then, considering the film's called Revenge of the Fallen plays an incredibly small part in this film. He's probably only in about four or five scenes. Megatron is back, but again, he's not in it that much at all. He's got this bizarre kind of power play thing going on with Starscream, which I didn't notice in the first film at all, but is in this one. There's a lot of scenes of them bickering, which was odd. There's actually a lot of scenes of the robots talking to each other, which don't go down so well, really. But then yeah, then the human stuff's just not really that great either. Josh Duhamel and Tyrese Gibson as the two main soldiers from the first one are back in this one. And they're very, very loosely back in this one. They basically provide kind of background support and occasional kind of exposition, and that's about it. They have a bit more of a presence in the final battle scene, but not really that much more, to be honest. Let's see. Shia LaBeouf, Megan Fox, she was a terrible actress in the first one, really, but in this one, all she does is bend over things and shout Sam an awful lot. And there's this stupid fucking subplot which is designed to make tension between the two of them, where he won't tell her that he loves her and she won't tell him that she loves him, even though she blatantly wants to, and, you know, you're not too sure about him. Great. All right. Fine. Brilliant. Who gives a fuck? And then, to add to this, you've got this new kind of love interest, Alice, played by Isabel Evans, I think. Isabel Lucas, sorry, I don't know where I got Evans from. Who gets written out of the film fairly quickly. It's a little bit of a spoiler, but fuck it. And actually, thinking about it as well, there's a new Decepticon who's power was so unlike any of the other Decepticons and so useful that if they'd used that power before, I'm pretty sure the Decepticons would have won way, way earlier than before. This one felt like Michael Bay saying, you know what would be cool, what if? And then it comes all about to nothing, really, and whatever. Let's see. John Turturro's back as ex-Agent Simmons. Whatever. He's basically paired up with Sam's new college roommate, who was so unmemorable that I can't even remember his name. Bear with me. Nah, that's not him. Wow, he's not even on IMDb. He's not even on the IMDb front page. Or is he? No, he's not. Oh, Leo. That's him. Ramon Rodriguez as Leo, who was pretty bad, to be honest. And, he's in The Taking of Pelham 123 coming up as well. That'll be good. I thought he was going to be written out pretty early on, because it seems like they're setting him up as a bit of a douchebag, and they continue that. But he hangs around for the entire film. You've already got Shia LaBeouf, you've already got Megan Fox, and you've got John Turturro that comes into it later on. That's all you need, you know. And, I mean, instead, you've just got these guys running around doing I don't even know what. There's a long scene of exposition that Jetfire does in the middle third, which if you do not pay attention, and I'll be honest, I stopped paying attention, you are not going to have a fucking clue what is going on for the rest of the film. So I will be honest right now, I don't know whether it was because of the direction, or I don't know whether it was because of the script, but I'm pretty sure it was the direction and the script and not me. But the last half an hour is completely incomprehensible, and I had no real idea what was going on at all. You've got general us versus them kind of stuff, but then where the fuck Sam's parents came from, they just kind of run in at one point. I've got no idea. There's a giant transformer that you see in the last trailer that, like, swirls up a load of stuff, which gets killed off in a ridiculously anticlimactic way. The whole ending is anticlimactic. It's just explosion, 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 explosion. Bit of robot hitting another bit of robot. Explosion, explosion. Half a dozen slow motion shots in a row. Optimus Prime voiceover. End of film. And it's just, I don't know. The thing is, I really, really liked the first film. And it's not like I just liked it the first time. I've enjoyed watching that one on repeated viewings. That one's only 5 minutes shorter than this one, yet this one does feel like it's a good 45 minutes to an hour too long. It's just so self-indulgent, and just, I just don't know. It was obviously rushed. The CG actually, some of the CG really doesn't hold up. The two twins, a lot of the shots with them look incredibly shaky. And Optimus Prime and Bumblebee don't look as well detailed as they did in the first film. I mean, they've banged this film out just completely, I mean, like, I'm pretty sure the writer's strike probably affected this one as well, even though that's starting to become a bit of a crutch, that they've just banged this film out as quickly as humanly possible to get it out for 2 years after the first one. And the quality control is just not there. It's really, really boring. The action is not that great at all. And, I mean, it's kind of funny, but not as funny as the first one. It just, I don't have a clue what was going on for a lot of it. But the thing is, I can't imagine myself ever actually sitting through it again. Because it just drags like no one's business. We did a star screening on Tuesday, and I watched this on Thursday. And I was told by the people who watched it on the Tuesday, by a lot of them, that the middle third drags. It's not just the middle third. It's past the half hour, the first half hour. The last 2 hours drags. I was literally counting the reels, just going, holy shit, is this only reel 5? Is this only reel 6? I was absolutely crushed by this film. And yeah, it's not... I mean, I put that it was just meh on my Twitter last night after watching it, but after thinking about it, it's just a complete waste of time. And the fact that it's probably going to be the biggest film at the box office this summer really does sadden me, because it's... I'm going to be interested to see what the second weekend drop-off is. I'll say that much, because I think it's going to be quite hardcore. Actually, no, I don't, because it's Independence Day weekend, the second week that it comes out in the US, so no, the drop-off's not going to be that hardcore. But I was very, very bitterly disappointed by the vast majority of this film. And the fact that Michael Bay said that he's not coming back for a third one, I think might be what the franchise needs. It also needs a good script editor, and someone to just kind of have a word in the director's ear and just say, you know, maybe this isn't a good idea. Because it does just feel like Michael Bay and all involved, in fairness, have just coasted along on the success of the first one and just thought, more, 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 more. That's what people want. All right, do it. And then this is what you've got. I'll be very, very intrigued to see what you guys think. Because I've got to say, I was the only person who I've spoken to. I haven't spoken to myself. Sorry. But I've spoken to quite a few people who've seen this film, and they all said they enjoyed it. I'm the only one that's actually come out with a negative reaction. And I really, really enjoyed the first one. So, Transformers Revenge of the Fallen. It's down there with Wolverine, to be honest with you. It's down there with Angels and Demons. It's probably better than both of those films, but really not by much. The gap in quality between Star Trek and Drag Me to Hell, and then these other summer blockbuster films so far, is pretty gaping. And we're only a month... we're about a month and a half into the blockbuster season, and already I'm willing for... like September to roll around, just so that we can get some, you know, more kind of quality fare again, because so far I've been getting disappointed. And I mean, Public Enemies, Land of the Lost, I'm still looking forward to, despite the mixed reviews, but you know, that's pretty much it for the next couple of months. Taking a Pelham 123, actually, even though I've heard mixed things about that. But you know, Transformers Revenge of the Fallen, a real, real disappointment. Nothing I say is going to stop people from seeing it at all, and I completely understand that, obviously, but I reacted very badly to it, as you could hear, and just a bad film. Okay, it's news time. Got a few things for you this week. Starting off, just check out chud.com and look at the article titled Breaking News, Robert Pattinson in Accident. That shit's funny. And I believe... James McNulty pointed that out to me. So thank you, James. On to actual news. Sean Penn has dropped out of the Three Stooges film, and it's actually not going to be doing any acting for the last year, it would appear, for the next year even. He's also dropped out of Cartel, some sort of drug war movie. Yeah, there's rumours that it's basically because of his marriage with his wife, Robin Wright Penn's a little bit on the shakes, and he's wanting to spend a bit more time with his wife and kids. I'm sure he doesn't need the money, so yeah, fair play. But who is going to replace him? Who knows? George Clooney. That's what I reckon. Maybe. And actually, weirdly enough, the last bit of news this week, just because not a lot's really been happening that's taken my interest over the last week or so. So yeah, it was announced last week, I think I talked about it on last week's show, that Peter Morgan is going to be co-writing the new Bond film. So almost inevitably, rumours started coming up that Michael Sheen was going to play Blofeld. Ridiculous. You know, just, I mean, anybody with half a brain who reads film news will know that this is just kind of stuff being plucked out of the air, quite obviously. And Michael Sheen, whose Twitter updates are very entertaining, you can find him at Michael Sheen. He said that regarding this, he's currently in talks with his arm to play his elbow, which, you know, kind of sums up the ridiculousness of this story. You know, Peter Morgan. Wow, Michael Sheen was in a lot of his films. Right, okay, he's going to be in the next Bond film. Yeah, that's a news story. Just ridiculous stuff. And hey, so, yeah, I suppose I could just mention briefly Michael Bay writing to Paramount Marketing saying that he felt that Transformers 2 wasn't being bigged up as enough of an event movie. Apparently, this, I read this on the BBC News website this morning, funnily enough. He said that apparently a letter dated on May the 4th said that, you know, there'd been bugger all marketing, and, you know, at the MTV Movie Awards, they did like some half an hour thing for the original Transformers, which I don't remember. But this time it was just Shia LaBeouf and Megan Fox presenting an award and, like, you know, what's going on. Even though apparently in a later email he retracted all of this. But that guy's a fucking douchebag. He's made a shitty, shitty movie, and he's obviously a shitty, shitty person as well. So I'm sure many people will join in saying fuck you, Michael Bay. That's it for news this week. More probably next week. Okay, first Blu-ray review in a while. This week I'm taking a look at Ghostbusters, which was released last week in the UK and the US on Blu-ray for the first time. I don't think I need to say much about Ghostbusters at all. It still completely holds up. Bill Murray is just ridiculously funny in it. I think he combines very well with the, like, the puppy dog enthusiasm with Bill Murray, and the, like, just the kind of captain exposition of Harold Ramis. And Ernie Hudson's somewhat sidelined in this one, but he doesn't come in until like a third of the way through, or halfway through, I suppose. But you know, the story itself is good. It's got its fair share of scary moments. I certainly remember why I was so fucking petrified of it in my earlier days. You know, it has got its moments, and yeah, but I mean, crucially, it is just very, very, very funny. First time I've seen it in a few years, and it still really holds up. But yeah, onto the Blu-ray itself. Now, there has been a lot of controversy about this release, and it's to do with an issue which is very high on Blu-ray enthusiasts' agenda, and that is film grain. Right, so basically, film grain, so, you know, grain that you see on film, studios kind of have a choice to make about what they do with it. They can either leave it in, or they can do a process called DNR, which stands for digital noise reduction. And what that basically means is that they kind of scrub out the grain to create a picture that's just kind of like, it looks just a lot cleaner, really. But the thing is, if you scrub out the grain, you'll lose detail in the picture, because the grain kind of, it basically, that shows that it's kind of replicating the theatrical presentation. If a film's shot digitally, and then transferred to HD, then there won't be any grain unless you apply a filter. But that's fine, because that's staying true to the source. So films like Curious Case of Benjamin Button or you know, Zodiac won't have any grain in the picture because they didn't have any grain in the first place. But particularly with older films, this is becoming an issue for some people, because there's kind of a battle between those who like the grain and those who prefer the DNR process. I bring this up because Ghostbusters is very, very, very grainy. And I think that's probably, it is staying very, very true to the source of the original master in the first place. I mean, the film is fairly old, so the film stock used probably wasn't as good as like film stock used today. I'm sure it wasn't. And the result of this is that through a lot of the film, there's a lot of grain swirling about. And the thing is, because I know this means it's keeping in the detail, I'm absolutely fine with it. And also, it does make it look like you're watching a print of it, which is kind of cool, really. But the picture itself is very, very good. It's not like the most stunning old film to HD transfer I've ever seen. I'd still hold up Mad Max 2 The Road Warrior or Halloween, John Carpenter's, as being examples of that. But the detail in the picture is very, very good. Bill Murray's face is more kind of craggy and crevice-filled than I think I've ever seen before. And it does... It still looks pretty sharp, I've got to say. It looks very, very nice. It doesn't look like a new film, but it does obviously look like the best you're ever going to see it on a home video format, at least for now. So I really, really like the transfer, to be honest. Detail is you know, is very high. The sharpness is there. You know, contrast is spot on. It is a good transfer. It's a very, very good transfer, but it's not like excellent or stunning. Audio, I haven't got a surround sound set up for Blu-ray, so I can't say, but it has got a Dolby True HD 5.1 English soundtrack, which I believe is uncompressed, so the sound should be very good. On to the extras. The film basically retains most, but not all, of the extras from the original DVD special edition and chucks a few new ones in there. The ones that are from the old DVD are presented in standard def and look pretty bad compared to a lot of the other features. So you've got deleted scenes in a so-called scene cemetery. You've got an old featurette. You've got a few other bits and bobs in there. You've got the original commentary that was on the disc, featuring, I think it's Harold Ramis, Dan Aykroyd, and some other guy from behind the scenes. But you don't get the kind of the drawing on screen thing that the original DVD did, which is a little bit disappointing. The film is on a dual layer 50GB Blu-ray disc, so I'm sure they could have fit that on there, but you know, never mind. The Blu-ray exclusive stuff, you've got something called Slimer Mode, which is basically a picture-in-picture track, and is actually pretty good. It's filled with new contemporary interviews with the cast and some of the filmmakers behind the scenes, and is pretty entertaining, actually. I watched the first half an hour or so, and I am going to watch the rest of it, because, it's good. You've got a lot of the main players there. I think only really Bill Murray's notable by his absence, and it's a lot of fun, really. I mean, Dan Aykroyd and Harold Ramis still obviously have an awful, awful lot of affection for Ghostbusters, and it very much shows. Those two are actually also on the other features. You got Resurrecting the Classic Car, which is about restoring the Ecto-1 for a promotional tour, which, I don't know, is fine. It's presented in HD, which is nice. It's okay. It kind of does what it says on the tin, and it's fine. It's only 15 minutes long, but hey. And there's also a 15-minute long making of the video game, which, I'll be honest, this release is pretty much, I think, being done to promote the video game more than anything else. That came out on various formats in the US on Friday, and PlayStation 3 only for now in the UK on Friday. So, yeah, this release kind of feels like it's just being tied in with that. So you get that, and you get a trailer for the game as well. So, yeah, I mean, it's not an absolutely staggering Blu-ray release, I must say. But, you know, it is a very, very solid back catalogue release. And considering the summer months are always a little dry on, you know, good film on disc content, it's good to see something like this coming out, really. Yeah, I mean, I picked it up for $13.99 and I got a free Ghostbusters keychain with it, so I'm perfectly happy with that, you know. But yeah, I mean, it will probably be available in certain promotional offers like 2 for whatever before too long. So I would say it's very much a disc worth getting. I mean, especially if you're a fan of the film, it's the best it's ever looked. And the Slimer mode picture in picture is worth a viewing. But yeah, I mean, if you're not absolutely desperate to add it to your collection, it's not one you really need to rush out and go buy. But I would say that it's a Ghostbusters on Blu-ray is very much worth getting overall.
Can you see my feet? I see my feet. How do I know they're mine?
Paul, what is going on with you?
You want to take a break, Paul?
I have this throb in my stomach. I have a pain in my chest like somebody put my heart in a vice and just tightened it.
Things have been pretty strange around here recently.
I feel stuck.
Is your soul weighing you down?
I wasn't quite sure about the services provided.
We only offer the possibility to de-soul the body or disembody the soul.
Believe me, when you get rid of the soul, everything makes so much more sense.
Good luck.
How are you feeling?
Well, maybe lighter. Yeah, slight. Light.
The first few days were fine.
Are you sick?
No, just the usual stuff.
Now, I've been sick as a dog. I can't make love to my wife.
You smell different, feel different.
I can't feel a thing, nothing.
I can't feel anything.
I just want my soul back.
This has never happened before. We probably shipped it to our New Jersey warehouse.
Oh, God.
Okay, it's time for this week's trailer talk. What you heard there was a clip from the trailer for Cold Souls. And colour me intrigued on this one. Basically, Paul Giamatti is playing Paul Giamatti, and he seems to be going through a few problems in his life, and he thinks that a way of combating it might be to de-soul his body. So he goes to a place run by David Strathairn and gets his soul removed. But when things start going wrong, he tries to get it back and then finds it has been stolen or gone missing or something. And it may or may not be a victim of soul trafficking, and he has to go to Russia to try and find it. Crazy enough sounding story that has me very interested. A little worried that it's quirky for the sake of being quirky, something which certainly affected, I don't know, like the Darjeeling Limited or Synecdoche New York, films like that. Even though this looks more promising than those, I think the story looks pretty damn interesting. Paul Giamatti's obviously playing kind of like a version of Paul Giamatti we expect from the films he's been in, you know, as such. And it looks fun. It looks quirky. It looks like it could be very, very funny. It looks like it could potentially be very, very annoying. But, you know, I'm on the fence with this one, so we shall see. Right, on to the next one for the week.
This mass
suicide adhere to the Mayan calendar, which predicts the end of time to occur on the 21st of December of this year. This year.
What are the odds?
Okay, so the first kind of big budget winter blockbuster to get a trailer, 2012, Roland Emmerich's new film, and basically after all the disasters that he's thrust upon us in previous films, this time he's dealing with the end of the world. So that basically means he can come up with all sorts of ridiculously overblown looking set pieces. You got a volcanic eruption, you got massive tidal waves, you got buildings crumbling down for mysterious reasons. I'll go see it. It looks like stupid fun. The fact that it's dealing with the end of the world means I've got a feeling the world's not actually going to end in the film. I don't think it's going to have the balls to do something that a certain other film I reviewed a few months ago did. Even though you would expect this one to, and not that one too much. But anyway, don't want to spoil anything for any other particular films. Good cast. John Cusack, Joatel Ejiofor, I think that was Oliver Platt in there. So, yeah, I mean, he's got people probably working for a hefty paycheck, but, you know, it brings a bit of A-grade talent to the cast is never a bad thing. You know, it just looks like a good, fun, silly blockbuster for the winter months. It's Roland Emmerich's was likely to be retarded, but, you know, it looks like he may have one-upped his blowing up the White House with the end shot in that trailer. And, yeah, I can't say I'm particularly looking forward to it, but I will happily munch popcorn and sit through it, I think. That is it for trailer talk this week, and with the release of Transformers in the US next week, I'm sure some big trailers are going to be popping up in the next few days or so.
I can still see their faces. My parents, all the others.
They killed them.
Abra Mum. I should have protected them.
We're family. We have to stick together.
You have a plan?
Only four bullets.
Then we'll have to make them count.
For my brothers. For my parents. And for all the others.
We know these woods. They'll never find us in here.
Every day, more people are killed.
We will send for everyone who is left alive.
The old, the sick, there are thousands. How will we live?
We will protect you.
Okay, it is time for what else I watched this week. And I've only got a few things for you, actually. I think the fact that I posted the last episode on Tuesday night and I'm recording this the next Monday morning probably says something. I started watching Quantum of Solace on Blu-ray, but I stopped just because I couldn't be arsed, to be honest. I know I gave it a favourable review when the film came out, but I'm lesser so. Even though I think, to be honest, I kind of had other stuff to do, so I think I didn't give it as much of a chance as I would have otherwise. But yeah, I shut it off just because I had other stuff to do. So, but yeah, I put that on my Twitter, so I thought more eagle-eyed viewers might, listeners even might, eagle-eared, pick up on that, so I thought I'd just say. But what did I watch? Well, I watched Defiance, the recent Daniel Craig film, funnily enough. I actually watched that on Blu-ray, directed by Edward Zwick. It tells of the Bielski brothers, played by a small child whose name I don't know, Daniel Craig, Liev Schreiber, and Jamie Bell, who band together to hide a load of their fellow Jewish brethren in forests during World War II, even though Liev Schreiber's character kind of goes off with the Russians at one point because he wants to fight. I enjoyed it, but it's probably as generic kind of inspirational based on a true story film as you'll ever get. Pretty much every single plot beat you can kind of map out and predict is going to happen before you even watch the film. You've got people dying, you know, and like some of them mean quite a lot to the main characters, but none of the main characters ever die, even though one of the main characters gets really sick at one point, and there's like, there's a revolt on his hands while he's sick and he's got to stand up for himself. And, you know, there's births, there's marriages, you know, there's Nazis, you know, it's just very, very plain. And, you know, at like 2.25 hours, it plods along as well. But the performances are uniformly excellent. The chemistry between Daniel Craig and Liev Schreiber is very, very well done, actually. They do kind of feel like two kind of opposing forces kind of bashing up against each other. And Jamie Bell's pretty solid as well, even though he doesn't get too much to do. He's kind of generic younger brother guy. Yeah, I mean, that's all I've really got to say about Defiance. It's perfectly fine, but, you know, it's a solid 3-star film. It's not awful, but it's not, there's not one original or innovative bone in its body. I'll say that much. Blu-ray looks pretty good, I must say. The daylight scenes in particular are very impressive and sharp and full of detail. So, yeah, the Blu-ray is actually all right, but meh. I also rewatched Revolutionary Road. It's the senior's film at work this week, so I had to run it through. And my phone is going. Sorry. Okay. Yeah, so Revolutionary Road still annoyed me as much as it did the first time round. I don't know what Sam Mendes was going for with the performances, but everybody's kind of like, they're kind of thinking of what they're going to say and how they're going to act it out before they actually do it. It's like they're not actually listening to what the other person's saying. I mean, Kate Winslet in particular, I'm glad this wasn't the performance that won her an Oscar, because her gesticulations and she's very expressive, and Mendes must have been going for a stagey thing with this, but it really, really doesn't pull off. Leonardo DiCaprio fares better, but he's as subtle as a sledgehammer through the film. And, I mean, Michael Shannon is the standout performance in this film, even though he's saddled with some awful fucking dialogue. And, but his kind of eccentricities work for his character. But, yeah. I'm really, really glad this didn't get a lot of attention come awards time, because it's very, very Oscar baity, but it's not particularly well done Oscar baity stuff. And I think I was actually more annoyed by it this time around than I was the first. So, two films I was very much meh or annoyed about. But the last one is one of my films of 2009 so far. And I wasn't expecting it. Kim Ji-woon's The Good, The Bad, The Weird. Kim Ji-woon, who directed A Bittersweet Life and A Tale of Two Sisters, comes up with this crazy fucking mad Chinese western. I'm just going to go on IMDb and get the actors' names and whatnot, because I want to talk about them a bit. My phone's going again. Okay. Yeah, so The Good, the Bad, and the Weird is basically quite a simple story. It's about the hunt for a treasure map, and basically it starts off with the Weird stealing the treasure map quite kind of randomly. The Weird, played by Kang Ho Song. He steals it kind of accidentally because the Bad, Park Chang-yi, played by Byung-hun Lee, was actually holding up the train car to get it, and Park Do-won, the Good of the title, played by Woo Sung-jung, was actually trying to retrieve it for the forces of good. All three forces kind of clash together at certain points. The Weird and the Good kind of team up, and then the Weird goes away, and then the Weird finds himself in an opium den where there's some other people who want the map, and all the time the Bad's kind of going around killing a lot of people and looking very cool doing it, and the Good's just being a bit bland and disappears for a lot of the film. If there's one complaint I've really got about the film, well, actually two, I would say that the Good, Park Do-won, is very, very bland. He doesn't get that much characterization, but, you know, never mind. And a revelation towards the end involving one of the principal characters I thought was rather fucking obvious. But apart from that, I had a lot of fun with this. It's one of the most purely entertaining films I've seen in a long time. It's obviously not trying to do... is it South Korean? The film, I swear the film itself is supposed to be set in China, but if it's not, my apologies. But yeah, it does nothing but try and entertain you, and it's just an awful, awful lot of fun in doing so. Even though I also noticed our version is cut, I've got a feeling that's probably to do with a horse. Anyway, it's also got one of the most fantastic action sequences I've seen in a long, long time. This massive... really, really long chase sequence where pretty much everyone is in the country is going after the Weird of the title, and it's just, it's badass, and like it feels like very, very little CG was used, and it's just so much fun. And when you see the Weird with the scuba diving helmet, I defy you not to absolutely burst out in fits of laughter. That scene in particular absolutely killed me. I really wasn't expecting it. It completely blindsided me. But The Good, the Bad, the Weird is probably going to be on my top 10 of the year come the end of the year. It's just 2 hours, 10 minutes of craziness, which, just... really, really kicked ass. And I'm definitely going to be buying the Blu-ray at some point. It's got an hour and a half making of on it, and that'd just be great. And I mean, the Weird, played by Kang Ho Song, of The Host, I believe, and forthcoming Park Chan-wook's First, fantastic, great performance. Just really, really messed up guy. You know, never too sure what he's up to, and he's just a lot of fun. And Byung-hun Lee as the Bad, the epitome of cool, basically. That's all I've really got to say about that. The Good, the Bad, the Weird. Seriously, check it out. It's an awful, awful lot of fun. I know Mike from Chinstroker vs. Punzer is a really big fan of this film as well, and hopefully there'll be a CSVP on it at some point, which I may try and join in on. I thoroughly, thoroughly recommend this film. I saw it the day after Transformers, and it kind of just completely revitalized me. And I really appreciated this film for that as much as anything. But The Good, the Bad, and the Weird, fucking great film. And out of all the films I discussed this week, it's by far my pick of the week. So there we go. So I'm sure I will have more what I watched next weekend. Donna is going away for the weekend next weekend, so that will leave me time to just watch films, so I'm sure I'll have more to talk about then. Okay, so it's time for listener feedback. And first of all, I'd just like to say two-word review this week. I only got one, and it was from Steve Nix's godson, who said that Transformers 2 was really good. I'll let him live. On to the actual feedback. And I must apologise to Jason Farrell, because I said I was going to write him back, and I never did. I just completely messed that up, to be honest. Sorry, Jason, but I'm going to talk about it now. So he says, hey, Ian, sorry I haven't written you for a while. I've built up a fair few topics in the meantime, so I'm about to test your avowed tolerance for long emails. First off, Mar, you're a busy man these days, cranking out your own podcast, guest starring on others, and now a collaborative effort with your Rattle mates. Nice. I haven't got sick of you yet. Kidding? So you have got sick of me? Fuck you, Jason. No, I'm joking. So I'm looking forward to listening to all of them. I haven't listened to your latest crossover with Mike and Paul yet, but I'm really looking forward to it, as The Thing, Carpenter version, is one of my favourite horror/science fiction movies ever. Speaking of Mr. Carpenter, he'd be my choice for your next marathon if you've closed the nomination process. John Ford would be interesting, but maybe a bit more thematically limited. I do have a suggestion of my own if you're still open to them. John Schlesinger. Just think, Midnight Cowboy, Marathon Man, Day of the Locust, Billy Liar, The Falcon and the Snowman. Great show this week, as always. You said at one point that you thought you'd be more angry about Doghouse, but I think it's safe to say, judging by the end of your review, that you're plenty pissed off about it. Which I certainly don't mind, because from the sound of it, I'd hate that film too. I tend not to like movies with a bunch of guys sitting around getting drunk and making crude jokes in the first place, but when you combine that with the misogyny and mean-spiritedness of this film, yeah, no thanks. Redcliffe sounded good. You're a bit of a gamer, aren't you? Maybe you've heard of the company Koei. They've put out literally dozens of games based on the conflicts you describe with Cow Cow and the gang. If you are interested in that era of history with a dash of mythology, and you've still got a PS2 around, grab a copy of Kessen 2. It's bound to be cheap. As far as the movie goes, I'd really like to see the 5-hour uncut version. I kind of liked Terminator Salvation, at least the action bits and the general look of the film. A lot of what you, Jim Moon and Noel said I agree with, but I managed to turn my brain off and go for the ride. Unlike you, I've never been a Christian Bale fan, not since Empire of the Sun anyway, and I thought he was gritted teeth horribleness in this. He didn't show much emotion, and should have, which I thought was a fair point. But maybe I'm watching the wrong films, but does he ever? I was really glad that the Marcus Wright story took centre stage for much of the film, because I thought that was more interesting. Count me among those who think that the trailer completely spoils one of the best parts of the movie, though. Sigh. I finally saw Crank. You were right, I fucking loved it. I ate every bit of it up. All the humour, all the stylistic flourishes, his performance, everything. So often I hear slash read that a movie is non-stop action, and then I see it and I'm bored. It's very rare that I feel like a movie is truly fast-paced and doesn't give me a chance to catch my breath, as the adverts might say. This truly fit the bill. I haven't got to number 2 yet, but I can't wait. Just yesterday, I saw a crazy movie you might be interested in, Dororo. It came out last year from Japan, and it's based on a manga series by Tezuka. A warlord type makes a deal with 48 demons. They get to divvy up his son's unborn body in exchange for the power to unite the country or world. They go back and forth under his rule. So the kid is born looking like a rolling pin, and his mother puts him in a basket and floats him down the river, Moses style. Through one of those strokes of fortune only possible in fiction, a kindly surgeon specialising in the reattachment of limbs finds the baby, takes him in and builds a body out of what amounts to magic prosthetics. 20 years later, his father dies and he goes in search of the demons who stole his body. Eventually, he learns that his own biological father was responsible for his lifelong suffering and goes in search of him. Dororo actually refers to the annoying thief who tags along with him in the journeys, in hopes of attaining the fancy sword that makes up his left arm, once his own real left arm is reclaimed. The fights with the demons are completely awesome, if sometimes a bit silly. Last thing I'll mention before I let you go. I watched Dune, the extended cut, a while back. That was not as good as I'd remembered. That soundtrack sounds like Queen on a particularly bombastic day. I feel sorry for the actors who had to pretend to fire those goofy sonic guns. Yeah. And those shots of him riding the worms? My dear God. I still love the novel, but I know for a fact that the movie lost a lot of what makes it great, because as I was watching, I kept picking it up and comparing what I'd just seen to what's in the book. What do you think of Dune? I don't dislike Lynch at all, by the way. I just think that big sci-fi epics might not be his strong point. Take it easy, Jason Farrell. Thank you very much, Jason. That's a great email. So, yeah, I hope you've listened to The Thing podcast by now and enjoy it as much as I enjoyed recording it with the guys. pork, for those of you in the know. Carpenter is a choice. I've got to say, Carpenter is winning at the moment. You've got another week to make yourself heard on Twitter or the email or whatnot. Ford has only got the one vote, I will admit, and it's by the guy who came up with it, the idea in the first place. But I'd be more than happy to do John Ford. I'd be more than happy to do John Carpenter. And John Schlesinger is one. I actually, yeah, that list of films is a damn good one. So I may well get to him at some point. So thank you for that idea, Jason. Doghouse, I've said enough about it. I don't really want to say any more, but I'm glad you agree, at least in ideology with me, Jason. I'm not really a gamer, to be honest. I used to be, but I basically kind of had to make the choice of whether I wanted to concentrate on films or games in terms of like what I spend my money on, really. The perils of being in a relationship, I'll say that much. And films kind of won out, really. But Kessen 2 sounds interesting, though, I've got to say. But unfortunately, I don't have a console. I'd love to see the 5-hour version of Red Cliff, to be honest. Maybe not all in one go, but yeah, I'd very much like to see it. Fair enough. Terminator. The look of the film, I definitely liked. I must say, and the action. You know, the action at the start was fine, but I don't know. I had a lot of problems with the film, as you know, and, you know, if you enjoyed it, fair enough. I mean, like, with Doghouse, if you enjoyed that, I feel very, very right in calling you a douchebag, but if you enjoyed Terminator, I wouldn't go that far, you know, so, but yeah, the Marcus Wright reveal in the trailer is ridiculous. I'm glad you liked Crank. The second one's even more ridiculous, so I very much hope you enjoy that. Dororo is one I'm definitely going to be seeking out, because that sounds fucking awesome. that's all I got to say. That is a crazy old story, but I'm looking forward to that. And Dune. I've seen Dune the once. It's a bit of a shambles, really, isn't it? All I really remember about it is the ridiculously long Virginia Madsen narration at the start with her face on screen. And that's probably about it. Sting was in it as well, wasn't he? It's not one of those David Lynch films I've ever really thought of going back to in truth. So, fair enough. I mean, yeah, I think you got it in one, though, Jason. Sci-fi epics are not really Lynch's thing. Imagine if he did direct Return of the Jedi as he was offered. Imagine what the Ewoks would have been like. Thank you very much for that, Jason. It's good to hear from you again. And again, apologies for not getting back to you in writing. I hope you're okay with this, though. So, CineramaPodcast@yahoo.co.uk, feedback would be great. And I must also say, actually, thank you to those who I suppose it counts as feedback. Thank you to those who have written new reviews on the Cinerama feed on iTunes. I noticed that Steve Nix has, and I think that may be it so far, but if you have and I haven't mentioned you, could you just email me and prompt me to have a look, especially if you're not in the UK, because you've got to select different countries and whatnot in the iTunes store. And but thanks to Steve for that, and thank you to Jason for the email. That was cracking. So hopefully more next week. Okay, and that is it for this week's show. Thank you very much for listening. Coming up on next week's reviews include the looks dumb as fuck, but I still want to see it, Jack Black and Michael Cera comedy Year One. That's a defo. Also, one of anime live action adaptation looks like it could be interesting, or maybe awful, Blood the Last Vampire, and Emily Blunt. Oh, yes. and I like Emily Blunt and Amy Adams in a quirky looking little thing, Sunshine Cleaning, which also comes out in limited release in the UK next week. There'll also be the announcement of the next marathon subject and the films being covered, and all the usual gubbins. Okay, so feedback is very, very welcome. CineramaPodcast@yahoo.co.uk. The revamped rattle is up, and we are recording an episode of 35mm Heroes, the Rattle Film Podcast, this week, so that should be up in the next few days, I hope. The rattle is looking very, very nice now, so please go and see it and marvel at the first comment left on my Transformers review. First time I've ever directly annoyed a fanboy, so I was actually quite proud of myself. You can follow me on Twitter at twitter.com/IanLoring. Reviews on iTunes, muchly appreciated. And one day I'll get round to actually sorting out the new feeds, podcast alleys thing. So, yeah, hey. Okay, so playing us out, Alexis on Fire. New album, Old Crows, Young Cardinals. You heard Old Crows at the start of the show. And I'm going to close out the show with another track from their album, Born and Raised. Hoping to get the cast up on Sunday next week. I know it's been a little late the last couple of weeks, but my work schedule's been a little unwelcoming for getting the podcast up more on time, so apologies. But hopefully Sunday next week. And until next week, bye-bye. Pork!